I'm so cold and cute, I think I've got a real bad coup. I need to get out of the house instead of doing what you tell me to. I caught the COVID cootie, now my life is like a movie.
I got the COVID cootie, now my life is like a movie.
Alrighty, it's January 29th, 2021. That was COVID Cooties. I can't remember who sang that. Let me look it up. No, it doesn't say. Anyway, that was a song from way at the beginning of this whole PSYOP, back at the beginning around January, February 2020. And here we are almost a year later, still trying to flatten the curve or whatever BS excuse is going on. This is the Fakeologist Show. Tonight's show is number 261, and we might be able to get our numbers back on track because my schedule has changed a bit. It's slowed down a lot simply because of the fact that COVID is the coronavirus hoax PSYOP is starting to affect even more things. More businesses are slowing down, even some of the ones I'm associated with. So I'm going to have a little more time, and couldn't have come at a better time because it's super cold out and don't really want to be out running around. But on the other hand, I use it as an opportunity to maybe catch up, do a few broadcasts. Even if I just told you some of the websites, some of the YouTube, some of the video sites that I've been to in the last few months, even if we just talked about that, I would be talking all day long. I've said this many times on many broadcasts, including the audio chat. By the way, the audio chat's going on right now. So we have two channels buzzing away. We got me on the live stream. This is Fakeologist Radio 1. And on Fakeologist Radio 2, we have the audio chat. And that is on Discord. And Benoit and Velasette have reinvigorated that. They reconstituted the Discord server because Discord is like many of the big honeypots, intelligence agency honeypots, shutting down all the dissenting voices. So we were shut down, and I didn't really want to rebuild it, but these guys did, and they did bring many, many of the old users back. And you can always find whatever Discord server we're on because I have permanent addresses that are mine. Fake11.com/Discord should always bring you to my Discord server wherever it is. and therefore you don't have to memorize it. I usually put a link on fakeologist.com/blog. So right now our domain is safe. I don't have any real backups to the domain, although we do have a numerical IP address, so you could actually type in the numerical address of fakeologist.com, and I don't actually know what it is off the top of my head. It begins with 63, but you could just type that and find us. So if the domain name server database, which I would guess that the WHO or the people that run the world are trying to get a hold of, then they could disrupt that. Now, hopefully all it is a database where they attach names to numbers. It's a very simple database. I'm hoping that gets decentralized and disseminated around the world. So I'm hoping everyone could host the database, because with the power of computers and storage, everyone could have the domain name server database on their machine. And therefore it couldn't be taken down. So when it comes to decentralization is the name of the game when it comes to resiliency, as in not allowing one central body to destroy and control everything. And most people today, a lot of people don't know that Facebook and YouTube and Twitter are not the internet. So for Twitter to kick off Donald Trump, to me, they shouldn't be making that great big of a deal about it. Donald Trump could have, if he was a real hero, he could have started his own anything, any kind of social network, any of them. And he would have had 20 million subscribers, 20 million users. So he could have started a Mastodon server, a Telegram group, anything. So the idea that Donald Trump was censored, thrown off a private platform, to me is ludicrous. And it also meant that the worldwide public is so simple they don't understand that. Donald Trump could have had his own email list, he could have had his own website outside he had the whitehouse.gov, but he could have had his own social network. And it would have been the biggest social network out there. Twitter hopefully will just disappear now that Trump is off it and there's a lot less activity there. So that's why I don't think Trump was necessarily a great or a good guy. He sounded good, but when it came to technology, he was really just not utilizing the net as it was intended to be built. The internet is a spider web. Therefore, if we know a spider web, if you poke a hole in one part of the web doesn't collapse. That's the whole intention. It's not a linear line from A to B. So if one piece of the internet or the web is broken, then it can reroute around the break until it's repaired. Pretty simple. Pretty simple. Okay, so you might see a few more frequent shows here and there. There's so many people I'd like to talk to. One of my favorite local guys is Chris Skye. I've asked him many times to come on, but he's too busy, or he doesn't want to talk with me. He certainly has his own channels with which he can talk, but I really like the guy. He seems real. And he's the guy in Toronto that's going around telling everyone that you don't have to wear a mask. And he's explaining the bylaws, what a bylaw is. He's actually made an explanation about a bylaw more clear to me. And I just posted a video. I called it the Chris Skye Show. Because Rebel News, which is another seemingly real, I don't think it's controlled opposition, because I think they're doing a good job. Even if they are controlled opposition, for the most part, they are spreading truth and opposition, which I like. So Chris Skye and Rebel News went downtown Toronto a week ago shopping maskless. And as usual, they got a blockade. They got harassed by many of the stores. They let them in, but they won't check them out. I'm not quite sure what the strategy is. These stores, they let them in, they let them shop, but when it comes to time to check out, they won't check them out. Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I guess the main thing that these stores can do is just waste people's times. So they go in, they do their shopping, and then you can't check out. So the strategy the Chris Skies of the world are using is they'll calculate the total of their goods if they can't self-checkout and add the tax. And then they'll overpay, which I don't agree with, and just leave the cash at the checkout and leave. And since you have to pay for bags anyway, then they don't even take a bag, which to me is perfectly legal. It obviously is legal. You're paying for the goods. The staff is just being playing hardball and not following through with the transaction. Now, it's about 8 o'clock. Tonight, we're having Mark Tokarski from Peace of Mindful on the broadcast. We're going to talk for as long as we can, and we will take calls. I am on Skype right now. My username is Fakeologist, and you can message me, and I will talk. I will add you to the call. And I will also open up the phone lines. My phone lines are at fakeologist.com/contact. And you can call me. My number, I only have two numbers now, one for the U.S., one for Canada. I could probably just stick to one, but it doesn't really cost much extra to have two. The phone number is 810-666-1984. And the Canadian one is 902. Uh-oh, I don't know what it is. The phone number is in Canada, 902-400-1984. I'm going to dial Mark up now because I don't want to waste anyone's time. Come on. God, I don't like Skype. Did I mention I don't like Skype? Okay, here we go.
Bobby, you are prompt.
I try to be. I'm actually 1 minute late. Mark Tokarski, say hi.
Yes.
To... I'm the Fakeologist, Aberrato.
Aberrato, is that what I call you, or just Fakeologist?
You can call me... I have lots of names. Fakeologist, Ab, or my Christian name is Tim, T-I-M.
I'll go with Ab.
Yeah, I chose back in the days when... Most people were just using pseudonyms, which I was fine with. I'm not really trying to hide. I'm not really afraid, but just for the protection of people that might be embarrassed by what I talk about, I just used a pseudonym. But I believe everything I say. And I chose Ab Arado, which is angry man in Latin, mainly because I like the guys with Latin pseudonyms, because I love Latin. And most people, makes people think, what does it mean? So as I just started at A, and I liked Aberrato, so I just stopped right there. I didn't get very far when I was just listing Latin phrases out that meant something, because I was angry.
Oh, yeah.
After 9/11.
We were all angry and a little bit psychotic. I think after 9/11, you know, we hadn't figured out what happened yet, and they really had us by the gills.
Okay, so you are Mark Tokarski. That's your real name. You don't use a pseudonym, which is great. And you are of peaceofmindful.com.
Right.
And it's one of my favorite blogs, mainly because of your writing. I like your writing, but you also have guest writers, and I like most of them as well. And
I do too.
You and I are in real synchronicity when it comes to seeing the world. So we could just talk all night long about how much we agree with each other, which which might be boring, but
it would be fun to get some callers who think we're full of it.
Well, I don't tend to have opposition callers, and yeah. I don't mind opposition, but I like to, I like to go for about 2 hours because I'm an older person now. I'm getting middle aged, so I do get tired. And,
I'm 70.
Yeah, you're 70, which is amazing. So I'm going to
remember that Paul Simon song.
Yeah.
Friends, you know, how terribly strange to be 70?
Actually, that's one I don't know. What's it called?
Okay.
I could look it up.
It's called Old Friends.
Old Friends?
Yeah, sat on the park books, like, sat on the park bench like bookends. A newspaper roiled in the grass, sat on the, it's a beautiful poetry by Simon, but
well, you know
one
what
of the lines there is, how terribly strange to be 70.
The funny thing is, I'm a huge Simon and Garfunkel fan, and I've never heard the song.
Have it on!
Yes, we have the recording.
It's a wonderful song.
So guess what? That's a song I never listened to, but I even, as editor of my yearbook way back in the 80s, early 80s, I wrote to Paul Simon's publishing company to get permission to use bookends at the end of my yearbook. So that, I am a huge fan. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a huge fan too.
But I don't know that song, so now I'll have to listen to it maybe later. Maybe I'll bookend it at the end of this broadcast.
Prior to the song, Art Garfunkel went into a nursing home or an old folks' residence, whatever they call it then,
yeah.
And he got them on tape. And, you know, he got them so well that they included it on the album. So you hear an old man saying, I got a little in this world to give honestly $100 for that photograph and stuff like that.
Oh, so neat.
It's just well done.
Oh, that reminds me of another song by, I believe, a Canadian band called the Paolas. And they actually have a great song where they went into a nursing home or an old age home and took some recordings of some older people. And it's just such a sad song because when you get to that age, people just feel completely useless and unappreciated.
Yeah, it depends on if you're alone.
Yeah, it's so sad. And I found it really touching. So you're probably the most senior, I won't say oldest, you're the most senior fakeologist I've ever talked to. And we should have talked a long time ago because absolutely you and I have so much in common and I love your writing style. You're much more patient writer than I am. I'm more of a blurb writer. You will go in and in depth and I think you're actually smarter than me because the way you write, you really understand or go, you're more interested in going into depth in so many of the topics I love.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could say that's being smarter, but it's just we're different people because I read all your stuff too. And you hit so many topics that I don't hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't have time to go into all that stuff. So I just take your word for it.
Yeah, well, Yeah, I'm more of a collator.
Yeah, you bring me new bloggers and new podcasts and everything, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. So how and why did you start peaceofmindful.com?
Well, it actually goes back before the blogging era when I lived in Billings, Montana, and I was quite a liberal Democrat at that time. And the guy that ran the public radio station also ran the, what do they call it when ordinary people have TV shows?
Community.
Public
Access. Public Access, yeah.
Access.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Wayne's World.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, we have a lot of right-wing stuff going on here, but we need a little bit of representation from the other side, and asked me if I would do a show. And I said, sure. Sure, being, you know, foolish enough. And began to worry about it right away. You know, where am I going to get guests? What are we going to talk about? And I did a couple of really bad shows at the beginning, and I was obviously nervous and stuff like that. And then I began to see that it's really easy to interview people. You just ask them questions and follow their lead. And we did maybe 100 shows by the time it was done. I had to move to another city to be with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the time of my life, and I called the show Peace of Mind. I couldn't think of anything better.
Mm-hmm.
And later when we decided, I think in 2006, to start a blog, my son and I discussed the name of the blog, and I said, well, I had the TV show. I called it Peace of Mind, and he said, bingo.
Oh, beautiful.
And then later when we brought new writers on board and we were getting more of an audience and everything, it was suggested that Peace of Mind does not Google too well. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a lot of alternative stuff. So they added FUL at the end, peace mm-hmm. of mindful, to have its own name. And then, you know, I was a liberal Democrat, and then I did a lot of off-ball. We had 100 followers, maybe, and I did a lot of oddball stuff. And I just had the urge to write all the time. And then we got into, what's the guy's name, who wrote Weird Scenes in the Canyon?
Oh, Dave McGowan.
McGowan, yeah. Mm-hmm. Got into him, and reading that book, realized that those 70 or 80 actors and musicians that he said died by the gun or whatever means, mm-hmm. they couldn't have. You know, people don't die in that, young people don't die in that frequency, even in a war zone.
Right.
So a guy, by the name of, we called him Straight right. from the Devil's Mouth, came along, and he inspired me, and the two of us worked together, and we began to investigate that stuff. And then we ran across Miles Mathis, who was a godsend for me. Mm-hmm. And I've been, I guess, I wouldn't call it growing intellectually, but at least expanding my grasp ever since, seeing more possibilities. The world is not at all like I thought it was. And
what year are we talking about?
I think it was 2015 or 2016 when I ran across, I was on a YouTube one day, and there was a video there. I'm getting background noise here, sorry.
That's all right.
There was a video there by some guy with a deep, heavy voice, and he recommended everybody go to the Miles Mathis site, and then he went through the Laurel Canyon Manson stuff. And I realized at that point that that was a feeder for Mathis, and I think it's still there. Amid all the censorship and everything that's going on, I think that feeder is still there. But I went to the Mathis site, and I read the Manson stuff, and I thought, this is stranger than anything I've ever seen. And so many people have had that experience, and you either walk away from it or you embrace it, and I embraced it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what year was that? I must be stupid. I missed that.
I think it's 15 or 16. I'm not sure which.
Okay.
It was 2016 when I actually went down to Taos and sat through a three-day conference with Mathis, and he's a real person. Mm-hmm. I think he's smart as all get out, but he's, you know, kind of lost my interest today with all of the Phoenician Navy and the family stuff.
Yeah.
It's very hard to read.
Okay, so you were doing a radio show in Montana called Peace of Mind.
TV show.
TV show. Do you have, is there any archives of that? Anything on YouTube I can look up?
Oh, I would love to. It was all on video cassette in a cardboard box, but I lost track of it.
Oh, that'd be great if you could pull some of that up. So you haven't been able to. Actually, I just pulled an old video cassette from, 1986, and I thought, oh, I waited too long, and I actually, the audio is no good now, but it was family stuff. It was just the one family video I made of a reunion, and I had bought a thousands of dollars video camera / portable cassette player. And I just put it on to, well, they give it to you on a DVD, and I just put it online for myself, and everything is quite degraded. So the point is, don't wait too long if you have video cassettes, because they do degrade and decompose.
Oh, sure. And, 1998, my parents were still alive, so I was doing Peace of Mind at the time, and I was really comfortable interviewing people, so I asked them if they wanted to do an interview. And they both said, well, I don't have that much to say.
You know? Oh, yeah, that's what they all say.
So I sat them down. I did an interview with Mom and then Dad, their lives, and then a third interview about their lives together.
Oh, so smart.
And we got 6 hours on cassette tape. And like you say, it was degrading, and I sent the tape out to relatives, but they didn't listen to it, except one or two. Mm-hmm. I transferred it to a CD and then put it on my computer, but it was still low quality. Mm-hmm. So I guess about 3 years ago, I finally bit the bullet and sat down, and I transcribed everything.
Oh, on smart. Paper,
because paper survives when everything else doesn't.
That's true. Actually, I want to do that with my parents, but yeah. Yeah, I got to do that. And I want to do, yeah, I want to do that. I got
to
do that.
They love to talk about themselves. Don't worry.
Well, that's what everyone's favorite topic is, themselves.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that's why it's so easy to be an interviewer and a conversationalist because, and I've told my children this, I said, if you want to be known as a great conversationalist, all you have to do is ask questions of the other person. And then even if you don't say two sentences, they'll say, that was the best conversation I ever had.
Yeah, and listen to the answers, too.
Yeah, don't be like Larry King and just not listen and then ask a question that was just answered had you listened. That was my favorite part of Larry King. The stupid questions and him not listening.
He just died last week.
Yes, yes. That's what we're told.
Yeah. And so did Hammer and Hank Aaron.
Right, right. Oh, man. Larry King, as much as annoying and as goofy and as plugged into the Matrix as he was, that was appointment television for me. That's the only reason I would have turned on CNN. Is to watch his interviews because he did get the biggest names and
he had a way
of connecting. Well, just letting them talk because he didn't listen anyway, which is fine.
Did you ever see a piece of books put out by The Daily Show?
No.
It was a Christmas gift one year, and in it they showed the Supreme Court of the U.S. naked, how they would look like if they were naked. Grotesque.
Yeah.
And then they showed a picture of Larry King.
Oh, that's cruel.
But it wasn't a picture, it was a drawing. And they had his penis running down to his knee because he'd been married like five times and women loved him. And the caption next to it says, "This is all we can figure."
Well, you know, he was a big name, so there's charisma involved, and you don't get that big unless have something going on. They don't just promote anybody. We know the people on the top do promote, and you're pulled to the top. You don't rise to the top. But yeah, he definitely had absolute name recognition everywhere, probably in the world, that CNN penetrated, which was pretty worldwide. So yeah, well,
what do you think about somebody like Paul Simon? The talent is just amazing. Do you think he arose naturally and became talented, or did he have the talent and that's what caused him to be famous?
Well, I think YouTube has proven there are tons of talented people, but life gets in the way, and if you're just singing into the wind and no one's listening, then it doesn't really matter how talented you are. So I think it's definitely you have to have tons of talent, which I don't. For instance, I couldn't play the guitar and sing like he does. But definitely you have to have connections, and those connections have connections, and then you can couple that with people at the top with agendas, and you can be successful. I don't know if you have to sell your soul to the devil, like Bob Dylan said, but I think the elite that want to create these people and promote them and use them, they have lots of talent to choose from, I think. There's lots of talented people.
I think you might be... by the way, Miles Mathis wrote one time that Paul Simon was in the British peerage.
Okay.
And he couldn't figure out why. And I don't even know what that means.
Uh-huh.
But I used to work for a woman named Mary Alice Fortin.
Okay.
Who was the mother of... the gal that played Rizzo in the movie Grease.
Oh, I love Grease.
Yeah. And she
Rizzo.
Rizzo was her name in the movie, and I can't think of her. Oh, it was Stockard Channing.
Oh, I love Stockard Channing, yeah.
Yeah.
Who may have been a man.
She was said at one time to be the next Lucy, you know, and then her career kind of faltered. But I was working for her mother at that time, who was a millionaire. And I mentioned to somebody that I knew, you know, how is it that Stockard rose to such fame and everything? And he said to me, and this is way before I knew anything, he said, well, kids like that have nothing to do but study to be talented and to have a career. You know, she's the daughter of a millionaire, and she's going through training every day to be a comedian, to be a singer, to be everything.
Betty Blair Meg Rizzo. That's her name.
Really?
Wait. That's the Grease. Yeah. Sorry, I'm looking at the Grease wiki. Hello. Right. Yeah, sorry. It's Stucker chatting. Sorry.
She was good in that movie.
Oh, that was a great movie. That was one I actually paid for back in the day. I remember lining up for it.
Yeah, Travolta's a very talented guy, too.
Yeah, she was born in Manhattan, the daughter of Mary Alice, nay English. Okay.
Stockard.
Who came from a large Brooklyn Irish Catholic family.
She married during her life and inherited everything from both.
Walter Channing, Paul Schmidt, David Deben, David Rowie. Now she's with Daniel Gillum. She's still alive, 76.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Radcliffe College. Okay.
Yeah, because Mary Alice was in Billings, Montana, and Stocker Channing was not coming to Billings, Montana, unless it was to pick up a check.
I'm sure. Yeah, she's got quite a profile. So
that was a hint at how rich people become talented people.
Well, you don't have to work a farm, so you have time to move on and move up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't know her career, but yeah, Wikipedia has lots of stuff.
Yeah, I haven't followed it either. I was never a big fan. I just liked her in Grease.
Yeah, I liked that movie a lot, the music especially. I thought that the movie was just built around the music, basically. That's how that and Saturday Night Fever, that's how it seemed like the story was super weak, and it was just about trying to get the music.
Yeah, that reminds me of Give My Regards to Broad Street, that Paul McCartney movie.
Right.
The music was great, but the script was so weak.
Mm-hmm. So you're a liberal Democrat. So were you interested in conspiracy back then?
Only the Kennedy assassination. How about you?
Well, yeah, I was definitely thinking about the Kennedy assassination probably in the 80s. And I didn't do much research, but I asked for the big book. I can't remember who wrote it. There was many big books. And I probably didn't. I'm not sure, but I think what really I don't know if I got the book first or I watched Oliver Stone's movie first.
Yeah, that's what set me off.
Yeah, and I was pretty disappointed with the movie because I thought they were going to actually tell us what happened. I was that naive. I thought, oh, someone's going to just tell us and then we can just move on with life. But then it turned out to be a movie about the New Orleans guy, Jim, whatever his name was.
Garrison.
And I thought, wow, you guys, did you forget about explaining who shot Kennedy and just go into a movie? Why didn't you just call it Garrison? Because now we're just going down the wrong path here. You guys are obviously not going to tell us. Like, I don't know, at sort of the halfway point, you could get the feeling that we're not going to find out who did it, are we? Because we're not going in the right direction.
It was never the intent to tell us who did it.
Mm-hmm.
You just wanted to keep asking the wrong questions.
Right, so you...
That's where Mathis stepped in and rescued me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had gone down the rabbit holes and came up every time empty. And after Laurel Canyon and after John Lennon, I finally read the Kennedy piece that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I didn't believe it, you know.
So this is 2016, though?
15 or 16, somewhere in there.
Okay, so you were always looking into the Kennedy JFK show, but what about 9/11? What did you think back in 2001?
Oh, yeah, I really got sidetracked into a rabbit hole called Dr. Judy Wood, and I bought into that stuff. I'm so embarrassed to say.
Well, I did too, but what did you think happened in 2001, for instance, during that year? Because conspiracy wasn't even in my mind. I didn't even know about it. So did you have any knowledge of conspiracy back then?
The only thing going on that was of any interest to me was the Gore-Bush election.
Uh-huh.
Dade County, Florida. And from that came electronic voting machines.
Okay.
Which are used today so they can easily fake any election.
Uh-huh.
And I followed that into 2004, I think, when the exit polling showed that John Kerry had won.
Uh-huh.
You know, how bad were the choices?
Uh-huh.
And then 2008, Obama came along, but by that time they stopped doing exit polling because it was showing that the votes were not being counted.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that mattered at that time, but I uh-huh. slowly gave up the idea that voting matters.
Uh-huh. So, but you had no conspiracy thoughts about 9/11? Did you just?
Oh, sure, sure.
Uh-huh.
But it was so big, so massive. I couldn't get my arms around it. Uh-huh. I knew about the Nade tapes. I knew that, I knew there was this group saying that it was a controlled demolition,
uh-huh.
which seemed too easy because Judy Wood came along to fight that
uh-huh.
and say it was something from outer space. Yeah, I knew that there was something going on. I knew that I didn't begin to know, you know, all the things that you know now, that nobody died and that it was just a controlled demolition and they decided to make a TV show out of it. But that was so slow in coming to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't suppose by 2015 I even had a grasp on that.
Oh, okay. So during the time it happened, you would obviously have been 20 years younger. So it's been about 20 years now. So
yeah.
Even because you would have been my age or about the same age, and therefore, but you weren't in that mindset to wonder. Because for me at the time, I just figured America got what was coming because they've been provoking, and finally it came home to roost. But I think that thought was given to me by the media anyway.
Yeah, I used to put up an annual blog post on 9/11 mm-hmm. talking about the horror of the deaths and everything that day without the readers knowing that I was actually writing about Salvador Allende in Chile because mm-hmm. he died on 9/11.
Right.
Some years before that, and it was just kind of a joke I pulled on everyone. But
right. A lot of things happened on 9/11. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had no grasp that number. I just looked it up the other day, and there's two dates. November 22nd was Kennedy. You know, 11 plus 22 equals yeah. 33.
Right.
9/11 is pretty obvious. But then I looked at the day of the year that it was, and I think it was 254.
Okay.
So you had 2 plus 5 plus 4, and that equals 11.
Right.
So it has some kind of double significance to them, I think.
I think you can go crazy with gematria.
Well, I wouldn't call that gematria because I refuse to go any further with it.
Okay.
You know, people do letters of the alphabet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I just focus on 8, 11, and 33, and I know they use them, and I think it's just signaling, and
yeah.
I don't know anything more.
Yes, you could really spend a lot of time on the numerology. Some people do. It doesn't get you anywhere, but it's very entertaining, all the symbolism. Yeah, but I yeah. always look for the 11s, and even today with the unlimited numerology with the statistics gone crazy with the COVID hoax, the numbers are off the charts all the time. And, of course, they are making more numbers up and putting them into the media than in all the history of the world right now. So for me to look for 11s and 33s is, it's just like endless. It's an endless
yes.
parade. So it's pointless to say, oh, this is definitely fake because they just said 33 people died in a suburb of Dallas of the COVID. So pointing that out would be endless and fruitless, actually, but there's a ton
it's
of
not,
it.
It's not to point anything out to anybody else. I think it's just a trigger for me to uh-huh. look a little deeper. Because
uh-huh, uh-huh.
you know right away when you see, oh, like, what was it? John Wayne Gacy, the serial killer in Chicago.
Right.
This is ancient history. You were probably just a boy when he was doing his stuff, but
right.
he was said to have had 33 victims.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so I thought that was odd, so I went to Wikipedia, and it's like a 50-some-odd page article, mm-hmm. and I've been reading it lately, and it's just loaded with footnotes. 8, 11, 33 is only there once, but 8 has to be there like 20 times,
mm-hmm.
and they're signaling that none of this really happened.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know where to go with it.
Well, it sort of eases your mind in the sense that if you believe that most major media stories, crime, crashes, all of them, they're all written by probably some of the best Hollyweird, the best writers, the ones that they promote. So they're all really well constructed stories, and they don't I don't know serial killers, so I couldn't tell you if they're accurate, because I don't even know if serial killers have ever existed, but they're great stories. They seem plausible. And because we don't really have a point of reference, just like we didn't really have a point of reference for a plane hitting a tower, so none of us really knows what it could or should look like, because none of us have seen it anywhere, then we have to take it as believable because we don't have that point of reference.
Yeah. That's so true. I guess I'd forgotten about the planes hitting the towers. I used to write about that a lot, that Newton's second or third law says every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. So an aluminum plane hitting a steel concrete building would have shattered into pieces and fallen to the street. And so I knew what we saw on TV that day was, CGI.
Yes. Well, the best guy that described that was Fetzer, and he said, an aluminum plane flying at 550, there's your 11 miles per hour,
that's
into
right.
a tower would be the same as a tower flying 550 miles an hour into a stationary plane. And what kind of damage would that have done? It would have been the same.
Exactly.
So we know that a tower, if it could fly through the air and take out an airplane suspended in the air, it wouldn't have been there. It would have been,
I use the example of throwing a tennis ball at a brick wall. Mm-hmm. You cannot throw the tennis ball hard enough that it's going to impact the brick wall.
Yes, it won't go through and go into a million pieces in that sense.
Yeah, leave a perfectly circular hole.
Exactly. So you, 2015 is when your blog came online then? 2016?
2006, actually.
Oh, 2006. But,
yeah,
okay.
It just wasn't very interesting before that time.
So you started writing about the stuff I like in 2016?
Around that time, I think. 2015, 2016.
And the impetus was Miles Mathis, mainly?
Well, he triggered a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone to Taos to meet with him. And, I can't say his first name was Eric, but we called him Straight. He brought so much stuff to the blog. He was just an endless, just a bottomless well of stuff. You know, he gave me the ideas for many of the pieces that I later wrote about, people that had died and become somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
He would initially see it, and then I would see it too, and then I'd write about it because he didn't like the writing part as much as I did.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because that might have been the first thing that I noticed on your blog. So Straight brought you these characters that he said
I think it was Tyrone.
Tyrone, okay.
Yeah, we both know Tyrone.
Mm-hmm. Blue Moon.
McCloskey. Yeah,
right.
Blue Moon. But he was the one, I'm pretty sure, who said, take a look at Bill O'Reilly. He used to be a pop singer named Bobby Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I was just experimenting with the facial technology, and that's the first time I got a perfect match.
Mm-hmm.
That the two were, in my mind, the same person. So I guess it was Tyrone that brought us there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, came Janis Joplin, Amy Goodman, and then came a whole bunch of others, some of which...
So you did face splitting. That's what you did.
I did. And, I don't think most people are ever going to buy that stuff, but it's very convincing for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So
what would the purpose of that be? Because I always wonder, okay, well, there's lots of people they could use, so why would they recycle and reuse a person? Like, say, Bobby Fuller to Bill O'Reilly. Why would they do that?
That's such a good question. They control the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
But the players were wearing out their welcome, so they had to be reassigned, I guess. Mm-hmm. And maybe Bobby Fuller had a good TV presence where they thought they could make something out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Janis Joplin turned out to be a set of twins, which is something that got me into a lot of trouble. But I could easily see it, that there were two different people there. The stage performer with the wild hair and the not so good singing voice, but in my opinion, was the one who, she did all the performances, but the sit-down interviews were done by the one who later became Amy Goodman.
Okay. And are you still convinced of that? Because the only reason I care about Amy Goodman is I listen to the No Agenda podcast, and they love listening to her Democracy Now.
Yeah.
And I find her like nails on a chalkboard. She's just so grating. Her voice, her delivery.
I used to call her the Queen of Dower.
Mm-hmm. I just find, of all the news sources, I find it so strange and unnecessary to use her as a source, but I guess they go to her every single week to play a bit of that. So it drives me crazy, but I can't like everything about every show.
Sure. And the question was, are the twins still there interchanging, like, you know, Paul and Mike McCartney? Mm-hmm. And the answer was not really. The other one would step forward every now and then to do a show or to pose for a painting or something like that. But it became the I don't know which one. I don't know what her real name was. Mm-hmm. It became just one person after a while, and the twin kind of evaporated into the background, just like, you know, original Paul.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got into the Paul. I was into that for a little bit because it was kind of fun, and I listened.
It was fun.
There was there are quite a few people I listened to talk about that. For instance, my main interest was 9/11, but because I listened to people that did regular shows about 9/11, they would often, or more often than not, talk about all the other conspiracies. So the Paul is dead conspiracy, for instance, Fetzer brought on Claire Kuhn, who loved to talk about all that stuff. I found it interesting. I never thought about it, but because I like the Beatles, I like Wings, it was interesting enough for me to say, hey, oh, that's interesting. So these are entities. They're manipulated. What would the point be? What would the point of getting rid of one, or why would one get rid of themselves? That kind of thing. So that did interest me. So the Paul one.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, if you look at the movie, Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Okay.
I think there's two things going on there. One, I love the music, so it was good to hear it from that point. They both, Paul and Mike, are very good singers. Whenever there's a piece being performed in the movie where the singer is sitting down, it's the original Paul.
I didn't know that.
Wherever he's standing up, it's Mike. Mm-hmm. Because Mike was the better stage performer. You know, he's got a better stage presence. He's got more energy up there, where Paul was kind of a laid-back crooner. Mm-hmm. So you could see why Mike became the foremost and Paul had to take a step backwards. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing that was going on in that movie is that there is Paul, Mike McCartney, walking down the street by himself, kind of lonely one night, and off in the corner is a kind of a vagrant. He's kind of sitting down, surrounded by all his possessions and everything. The two look at each other, and they wave at each other. And I thought, oh, my God, that must be John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, making a cameo in the movie. And I've never been able to satisfy myself that that's the case, but I don't understand otherwise why I even have that scene.
I don't know the movie, so I'd have to watch that. I'll put it on my list. What is it called?
Give my regards to Broad Street. It's around 1984 or so.
Okay, so you're saying that both McCartneys are in it.
Yes.
Give my regards to Broad Street, Paul McCartney. Okay, I don't know anything about it. Okay.
Yeah, I can tell them apart so easily.
Was that written for Paul McCartney? What is a British musical drama? Okay.
Yeah, supposedly written by Paul McCartney. They do a lot of original music. They introduce a lot of new music, and it's all very enjoyable. You know, you just have to take the plot and set it aside, as you were saying before.
Okay, I've never heard of it. I've never heard of it at all. Okay.
It wasn't a big hit. I only got into it just last year because Commoner said, take a look at it. You'll see two Pauls there. And so I sent away from it. It took about 2 months for the movie to arrive in my box. And I looked at it in there right
away.
So
are you aware of all the other McCartney is dead conspiracies and researchers?
Yeah.
Like one of the ladies I interviewed was someone named, I think her name was Tina. She's supposed to be a lawyer from Seattle.
Yeah.
I talked to her years ago. And
you can't reach these people. You can't give them any other alternative explanation to what's going on, which makes me think they're hires or they're, you know, they're just off on the wrong track. In politics, misdirection is so much more effective than just plain lying.
Sure. So you think they're their agents put there to distract us from the real story?
Well, you can't know that.
And what does what does it really matter? Do you get satisfaction knowing how they deceive us?
That I figured it out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I do. The most fun I ever had was John Denver's death. And I spent the summer of 2016 off and on working that one out. You know, and giving up hope at a certain point, thinking, oh, yeah, he really died. And then coming around and saying, no, he didn't. And in the end, it was like a 13,000-word piece.
Why do you think they do that? What is the reason for the elite to take these people out? Is there an underlying central reason?
I wish I knew. With Denver, you could tell with the songs he was putting out, they weren't very good anymore. I don't know whether he actually wrote his own music, but if he did, he had lost it. So maybe it was time for a fade out for him. And the other thing was that his music sales just took off after he died.
Okay.
You know, it was like a renewal. But I don't know that the money really matters that much. But, you know, musicians faking their death, you know, somebody like Denver worth $21 million, we were told, didn't have a will. Same with Prince. I just think that's absurd.
Right. Well, the most obvious one that to me is Elvis. Now, I became a big Elvis fan back when I was a teenager for no real reason other than I was probably just looking around for different music, and I really liked it. But I was more attracted with the phenomena as opposed to the music, because I couldn't believe the mass allegiance to any one person on earth. It just blows my mind that someone can have that kind of following and that kind of influence. And the music was fine. It wasn't great, and he didn't write any of it, but that to me is the greatest fascination.
He was charismatic beyond belief. And, you know, Mathis wrote a paper on Elvis, and in the paper he claimed that, and his evidence was two live birth certificates of Elvis Presley and Aaron Presley, that there were two of them.
Right.
And if so, they were the most identical twins I've ever seen. He broke it down a little bit and said, you can tell by the upper lip or some, you know, very small thing like that, that there's two different people. And I think somebody who wrote to him later said, you got to remember that at the same time Elvis was performing in Las Vegas, he was also making movies in Hollywood. And there had to be a lot of Elvis there to get that much work out.
Sure.
So, but in that paper where he talked about Elvis being twins, he also suggested to his readers, you might want to take another look at this Paul is dead kind of stuff. It could be there's a set of twins there.
Right.
And to this day, I just can't help think he knew that one of us was going to go look for what he already knew existed. And it was me.
Okay, you were set up by Miles to do the work and broadcast it?
Well, that's my suspicious, and it was the most fun I've ever had. I mean, anybody can go look at their childhood photos and see a set of twins there. But then to see how they pulled it off during stage performances and that sort of thing.
Well, do you think that the original... Oh, somebody put a link. I just sent me an email. But I had to talk a long time ago with Claire Kuhn. And I think Gabriel, I just saw a flash of an email. I don't usually read my email while I'm talking, but... Do you think regarding Paul, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's not going to get us anywhere, especially in the era of COVID, but just by my cursory research, it seemed like the original Paul in the 60s, whenever they started, he looks like he was flipped out with the car crash story in, I believe it was November 66. Because that guy looks way different than the next one. So do you think he was replaced by the original guy was replaced by twins? Because there apparently was some kind of contest where they were trying to find lookalikes. at the time. So that's maybe how they were able to
I think from the very beginning, I think from the very beginning, even in the Ed Sullivan day, there were two Pauls, the twins, and maybe plastic surgery or whatever. They were probably identical twins since one is right-handed, the other left-handed. The one we know as Maka today parts his hair on the right. He's got a cowlick there, and the other original Paul is on the left with no cowlick. And, you know, the teeth are impacted for the original Paul. I think we were always dealing with just two guys and then body doubles that they use in show business to get them in and out of the theaters and stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, they pull up in a building and it looks like the Beatles getting out and going in the building, but in real time they're in the alley getting out of the limousine in the back and unseen.
So that was just security, basically? A security type thing?
That was my conclusion, and Lord knows I spent a lot of time on this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that there was always two, and as misdirection, they created the Paul is Dead story because these guys are very good at what they do. If you look back, well, I'll send it to you.
What's the point of that, though? Why do they want to – what are they misdirecting
I get you to ask
from?
The wrong question.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Paul dead? No, but there's two of them.
Right. That's true. Okay.
I'll send you, I wish I had it right in front of me now and able to send it to you, but it's a picture of the drum from the Sgt. Pepper's album.
Right.
If you take the top half of the drum and mirror it to become the bottom half of the drum, it says 11-9, he die, or something like that. And that kind of clue is so deeply hidden that nobody would have found it. It had to have been one of the people on the inside saying, okay, let's let it go. We'll finally tell them that...
Well, if the Beatles themselves were a whole operation, then that would have just been part of the whole fun, where they create riddles and just games
fun.
Out of the whole thing.
Yeah,
just
this is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And the people behind them were so talented, like... I don't believe for a second that when they quit performing in public in the late 60s that they suddenly went into a studio and got very good on their instruments. You know, they had a wrecking crew or something going on behind them playing the music. But they did the singing, and I think they were very good at that.
Yeah, it was a total – do you think it was just a massive British intelligence influence operation? With all the resources that could bring to muster?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It could well be. And what was the effect that these guys were very effeminate with the long hair and wearing high heels and collarless, you know, they were making men wanting to be less masculine.
Right. It was anti-establishment because it was a new generation. So they're trying to detach that generation from the old one.
And separate kids from parents.
Sure. And ideas. Break the ideas and the societal norms and just slowly disintegrate society to what it is today.
Yeah. And I think they had the ability at that time to create the madness behind them, to hire the girls to scream at the concerts.
Sure.
You know, it only takes a few to make the masses, you know, do the
right.
same thing.
So it was a completely manufactured operation.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. And yet at the same time, I look at the two McCartneys and think, those guys are really good singers. And Paul...
Well, of course.
Yeah, McCartney, the guy we call McCartney today, is a very good stage performer. I doubt they wrote a word of their own music like yesterday if that was written by Paul McCartney. Which one? Which one wrote it? We don't know.
But it's a very good operation. And I guess that's the big secret, that's not organic. These groups they don't get to the top on their own, and there's just a hidden hand that guides them to influence society. I guess that's the secret that they want us to not pay attention to.
Yeah. And they're not without talent.
Well, of course. As I said, I think there's a huge pool of talent to draw from, and you just pick someone who is compliant or just wants to be part of the operation, and why wouldn't you if you're a singer and your end game is to be famous? I think it would be easy. I think you would have unlimited stock to choose from.
You must be right, but and they're all you know, they're getting trained at a very young age to be famous.
Right.
So, I think I just flashed a thought of Karen Carpenter, who was a wonderful singer and who supposedly died at age 33.
Right.
I looked at the photos around the time of her death, and they were obviously fake. And then, not at the time of her death, but when I visited Mathis in 2016, I had brought the subject up, and he had looked at the photographs, and then he handed the photographs around on an iPad for everybody to look at, just so we could see that a person handing Karen Carpenter an award with her arm was actually about 6 feet behind her. Mm-hmm. And it was a camera illusion. And then Mathis wrote a piece on her being dead, you know, that being fake. He suggested that the older songwriters had used the Carpenters to make some of their stuff public before they died out, and that she was used for that purpose. And then they had to retire her because music was going to go a new direction.
And the last, and the last topic with the Beatles is, do you think they really ended the Beatles project officially really early? Why do you think they ended it so early? Because they didn't last very long when they could have lasted for decades.
Yeah, when did they, 72 did they break up, or 68? I don't know.
It wasn't deep into the project. As soon as they got really famous, they decided to disband. Do you have any idea why they do that? Was it just to disrupt the whole cohesion and take away something everyone likes, like taking candy from a baby, that kind of thing? Just to be
maybe
nasty?
I'll tell you something one of the commenters said on the blog one time that I've never investigated, but the rooftop concert, if you remember that.
No.
He said they were supposedly obligated to make one more movie for a movie company, and they weren't together anymore, so they decided to get together on a rooftop and just play their music. And the cuts and everything show people down below looking up and hearing the Beatles, and that the music was coming down over huge speakers and all that kind of stuff. And they did their big hits and all that kind of stuff. But the commenter said, if you look closely, those speakers are not even wired.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the whole thing was lip-synced.
Right.
And maybe they just couldn't keep the illusion spun much longer.
Huh. So it seems they gave up pretty early, for instance, compared to, say, Elvis.
Yeah.
The Elvis project went a long time, and clearly whoever was playing Elvis was down to playing state fairs, and it was obviously either intentional or he really was high and doped out of it and out of shape, and it was a good time to take that actor off the stage and then make him more wealthy or make the project more effective in death, because for some reason everyone, when you know that that's it, you can't have any more, it just increases the value like a rare commodity. Create scarcity by death.
I think you just explained John Denver too, and
maybe
Prince.
Sure. Well, everyone has a curve. There's nobody that stays on an accelerating, increasing curve forever. It just doesn't happen because people change, the audience changes, trends, everything changes. So to be able to surf a wave endlessly is not possible.
Yeah, there's always young kids coming along that need something different.
Right.
So they don't wind up being like their parents.
Mm-hmm. Right. That would be bad. All right, so so let's move to Miles Mathis a bit. And I know I don't really like talking about Miles Mathis because he'll end up writing about it and attacking whoever's talking about it. You went to see him. How did that happen? How did you get down? Why did you go there? How did you get there? In the sense that, why would you? Is that something you would normally do? Is just find someone you like and go to a seminar?
We were on opposite ends of Highway 285. I'm in Morrison, Colorado, and he's in Taos, New Mexico. And I think 285 ends in Santa Fe, so it was a straight shot down there.
Oh, okay.
And I was in a comfortable part of my life where I didn't have a lot of work, and I was financially not hurting. So I took a few days to travel down there, stay in a motel, and meet with a bunch of really nice people, including Miles. And we talked about everything under the sun in those 3 days. He had some scripted stuff going on, and he quickly gave it up because we wanted to talk about other stuff, I guess. So
Okay.
We just jumped.
So he put on a seminar.
More or less, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you would have to call it an unscripted seminar because most of it was kind of a cappella.
Did you already know he was a good writer? Is that you had already been familiar with his work?
Yeah, I had already encountered him. I had read everything faithfully up to that time. He hadn't gotten into genealogy and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I stayed away from his science stuff because I can't grasp it.
So he had all these explanations of the greatest media events and stories for the last however many years.
Yeah, he seemed to know everything under the sun. And even the Lindbergh flight, he put up a pretty good paper there giving evidence that that wasn't real. Mm-hmm. I mean, he must, I don't know how many hundreds of papers he has out there. He goes way back into history. He exposes the Custer massacre as a fake. Mm-hmm. All of that. He was just a wellspring of knowledge. And
so is it possible one guy could know all this and be this smart and be this well researched? So you're convinced that this one guy knows all this stuff?
Well, I'm not going to say anything negative about him.
Yeah, okay.
Because we've done that on the blog, and I've regretted it.
Okay.
I'll just say that it seems unlikely at times, but mm-hmm. no matter where the work is coming from, it's good work.
Mm-hmm. It's convincing work.
Yes, convincing is a better word.
Right.
And the work is not so interesting anymore when he gets into genealogy and everything. I just sort of fade to black and leave it there.
Right. Well, he is competing with lots of people, but I've saved most of the stuff that I'm really interested in, and to me it's the very good explanation because I don't even have an alternative explanation, so I'm not saying anything negative because I'm a huge fan of most of his views, and it's strange that there aren't too many people that talk about it anywhere. He doesn't really have a Twitter, he's not on YouTube. There's you and there's me. I know I link to lots of his stuff, even mm-hmm. though it's in a PDF form and it's not easy to read and link to and highlight. But I've linked to at least 40 or 50 pieces. I've saved many of his PDFs on my end just in case, the ones I'm really interested in. Because you should save anything you're really interested in case it goes away one day.
Yes.
And actually, I'm just looking at his site now, mileswmathis.com/updates.html. And actually, I'm behind on the reading, just looking at the followed links. And he's done quite a few things on Klaus Schwab, The Great Reset. So I have some reading to do still. And I really do enjoy his point of view. So it just seems extremely prolific considering other people. There is no one else that is as prolific. That doesn't mean they don't exist, but it does mean they don't promote or write or make their stuff available.
Yeah, and all we can do is speculate about that. I guess I decided a long time ago to just take it at pace and decide for yourself whether or not it's something you want to follow up on or not.
Right.
Like his writing with the Kennedy assassination, I thought it was beautiful writing to begin with.
Yes.
Some of the opening paragraphs are so consistently and internally logical that right there you can stop and think, yeah, this thing was a fake, a hoax.
Uh-huh. Did he do a better job on JFK than Tyrone? Because I thought Tyrone's JFK TV, which I've saved a copy of on Fakeologist, is brilliant.
I do think Tyrone did a better job because he followed to more logical conclusions where Mathis said there was some kind of secret underground committee running the country and JFK had to disappear to sit on it and then RFK and then John Jr. That kind of stretched credulity, you know.
Uh-huh.
How does somebody who has officially disappeared actually disappear from view forever?
Uh-huh.
And that's a tough one.
On
the other hand.
Yeah.
Talked about a Greek island, I've forgotten the name, and said that
where Onassis was.
Yeah, that Jackie had gone to visit that place 3 months before the assassination, and that he was probably sent there.
Mm-hmm.
And I always suspected that when she married Onassis, that it was probably just a reunion of John and Jackie, because Mathis has also gone on to say that JFK was gay.
And, right.
Tyrone doesn't buy into that, then I really don't either.
That could be misdirection.
Yeah, sure could be.
Sure. But you don't think JFK was recycled in anyone else, do you?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, because there are, I don't, because I have so many people that I research, I'm not sure who says what, and I know you had the face splitting, and then there was Ed Sherini of Well Aware who did the ear thing, and I think he said JFK morphed into Carter, which is, to me, absurd.
Yeah, sort of absurd. Yeah, he really did disappear. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing that Tyrone brought up was, you know, you had a lot of dead Kennedys, Joe and Carolyn, or mm-hmm. not Carolyn, but Kathleen.
They made a habit of it.
Yeah. Tyrone said that Bobby's kids, all 11 of them, were probably not all Bobby's kids.
Mm-hmm.
That he was probably housing kids from the other, you know, fake dead Kennedys. So I looked for one who might have been Patrick Kennedy, who supposedly died at 1 year old. Mm-hmm. Died shortly after childbirth. I thought he might have been shipped over to Bobby's house because the assassination was on the horizon. And there was one of the Robert Kennedy kids who did come along around that time, but I can't make anything of it because he doesn't look like John or Jackie.
So what do you think the purpose of faking the death of a president was back in 1963? What is your conclusion? What is the reason for the deception?
I can see something similar going on with John Kennedy and John Lennon and Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
in that they are built into cultural icons, heroes in our minds, leaders, people we want to follow who are taking us to places we want to go to, and then they kill hope.
Killing hope.
Yeah. That's all I can make of it, because...
Is it just because they're such devil, Satan worshippers? They just hate positivity in the human spirit? They just want to constantly zap it?
That could well be, but I'm not inside their mm-hmm. filthy heads, so I don't know. That's the only sense I can make of it. Martin Luther King was brought out to be the leader of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then they killed him. But I don't know. You see where a lot of the leaders behind the civil rights movement were intelligence.
Control.
And also, yeah, and gay rights and all that kind of stuff, too. And then I think on the other side, you know, we needed a civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
We needed to do something for black people. And we needed for gay people to be able to live normal lives. So this is not all bad what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. They're just taking it where they want to take it and not let it be organic. Or they're trying to accelerate it, but they want to control it.
Exactly. Control is key to everything.
So control of society is always the purpose of all these events that we're given, even to this day.
I suppose, don't you?
Yeah. What else is there? They make the money. They print the money. So if you are just trying to... Do you think they're trying to lead the herd into a greater place or into a worse place? Or
I don't look at anything with COVID as being better
mm-hmm.
than what we had before. Mm-hmm. There's a cartoonist, I've forgotten his name, very famous, but he wrote an article in like 2019. And I'll find it sometime, and I wish I had remembered it now, but he talked about the decade 2010 to 2019 and all of the good things that had happened. It was one of the most productive decades in human history.
Uh-huh.
People were getting wealthier. We were getting better at making things. Communication, the internet, everything like that was going crazy, and we were just creating wealth like you wouldn't believe.
Uh-huh.
And then it ended with COVID.
Things were going too well.
That's what he didn't know about COVID on the horizon when he wrote that piece.
Oh.
But that's what I thought after I read it. That, they had to put an end to all this prosperity.
Well, the way I somehow look at it, and I've always been a pretty hard worker, and I've been one that sort of, I squirrel away as much as possible for the end, because I figure try and be more, you know how different people have different outlooks on how to live. Some people spend all their money. Some people save all their money. I kind of like the three little pig guy that built the brick house. And then when everyone else is wiped out, he still has a place to live. That's sort of how I've lived and continue to live. And I did see tons of prosperity, people just having a great time, people that weren't necessarily well off, behaving as they were well off, and bringing in people from out of the country to do all the crappy jobs because it's still better than the way they were living in their country. And I just thought, boy, it just seems like everyone is living so well. I wonder if this will ever end. And I've, you know, it's just like the hypochondriac that thinks, oh, this pain is just going to get worse and next year I'm going to have a... So I just didn't see it ending well. Now, I would never have thought that it would have been deliberately, they would deliberately scuttle the ship, which is what they're doing now.
But, yeah, I never would have thought that either.
But I did think that everyone was just flying all over the place and having a great time, and we're paving over farmland and everything was expanding and that kind of thing. I don't think humans are going to destroy the earth and then after that just destroy themselves, but I did think things were going really well for a lot of people. That is honestly a thought that went through my mind all the time.
Yes, and the food supply was, most people had food security. You know, a few belts in Africa, maybe in Brazil, where people were hurting, but by and large, everybody everywhere had enough to eat.
Way too much to eat. When I visited Florida, there was way too much to eat. They're shoveling food. The food that didn't get in their mouth would just hit the floor and they would just shovel it away. Honestly,
I think you
can look around and just see that it seems like there's way too much. The people here have way too much. And is anyone watching? Because if someone who maybe has some control over the situation, unlike me, saw this, they might think, we have to cut this. We have to cull this flock.
Yeah, we're all getting fat. There's a comedian named Dimitri Martin, who I like a lot, and he's just a joke teller. But he says he notices things like going into the clothing store to buy clothes, and the sizes are small, medium, large, extra large, extra, extra, extra large, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, why don't they just say small, medium, large, middle America, Michigan, Ohio?
Name the sizes after states. That's cruel.
Yeah, in the Midwest where people tend to be heavier.
Right. Yeah. They have, well, I think it's more, he could have said it, that they have way too many of the old normal sizes. Just get rid of all of them. Just make everything large with X's at the beginning of the large and then put regular and then go right into large. No smalls allowed.
Yeah, because
everything's a version of large.
I've struggled with weight over time. I'm at a weight I like right now.
All right.
You know, I'm thin and I feel thin and all that kind of stuff. But there was a time when I was about 30 pounds heavier, and losing that weight turned out to be pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with getting away from the American diet. Mm-hmm. You know, no more pizza, no more donuts, no more candy bars. Chips were my big failing. I love chips. Mm-hmm. And I just gave up all that stuff, and the pounds just fell off rapidly.
What are you eating now?
Mostly just protein and fat.
Okay. You cut out carbs?
For the most part, yeah. Mm-hmm. I enjoy carbs just like everybody, but if you have too many of them, you will begin to gain weight because it causes a buildup of insulin in your body.
Mm. Well, I know all about that. I'm an insulin junkie now.
Okay.
No, my daughter was just diagnosed as a type 1, and now I know too much about it.
Yeah. Well, the opposite of insulin is, I can't think of the name, but if you get insulin out of your diet, you will go into ketosis.
Well, yeah, as a type 1, you don't have insulin. Your pancreas is closed for business. And yeah, it's called DKA, diabetic ketosis acidosis. Diabetic ketoacidosis, DKA, I believe that's the acronym.
Is she going to get better?
Well, no. That's the problem. Type 1.
Sorry.
As far as I know, type 1s, there's no cure, and there's just management. Type 1 and type... I end up always talking about this in all my broadcasts, because obviously it's the number one issue right now in my personal life, and it's near and dear to me, but like I said, I know too much about it. But basically, type 1 and type 2 are completely different, and the person at the clinic said they wish type 2 wasn't even called diabetes, because to her, they're too different. One is type 1 is you don't have insulin production at all. Type 2 you do, but you're insulin resistant. And like all major diseases, they don't know or don't want to reveal the cause or don't want to solve the cause of this autoimmune disorder. So. Yeah, but there's no solution, dietary or otherwise.
That's very sad.
For type 1. Yeah, it sucks. But it's a growing business, and that's really the way to describe it. I didn't really know the numbers because we have public health care here, but just a loose calculation, it looks like it costs about $15,000 a year to maintain a type 1. Just with the insulin and the needles, and of course you can get the high-tech accessories that simulate a pancreas, like the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, and you can get a companion pump. And yeah, all that, it's a very expensive maintenance budget that you're going to have to endure your entire life.
Was this something she was born with?
No. She was one of the unlucky ones that as a teenager that we just found out the hard way as she was about to hit the floor that she had it. She had the condition.
Oh my goodness.
So, and she, at the time, her weight was not even, was in double digits. So it's not, none of the myths that are pervasive in the public perception of diabetes are true. It has nothing to do with eating too much sugar. That's the number one myth. And, ever since I became a truth aware person back in 2012, you naturally start looking into the food industry and the drug industry. That just comes into your research automatically as you look into 9/11 and JFK. Right. All that is not part of your normal research until you become a truther. And then all these ideas and all these topics come into your world. And for sure, all of that I was already aware of that. So I was already making all kinds of dietary adjustments to the family with what I knew. And I was juicing and trying to get into more raw and all these kinds of things and trying to figure out who is telling the correct dietary story, basically.
Yeah.
Because we're getting all these narratives. So who is telling the truth and why are they promoting this? It's really hard to sort that out. So yeah. My point is we were eating, I think, well. So none of our diets, I don't think, caused her condition. So then we get into all the reasons for the medical industry, and you look into the chemical industry and how one is a cover for the other. And then we're just deep down the medical rabbit hole. Now we're all forced to look at virology, epidemiology. That's what we should talk about now for our last hour. Because we're all into this now. Anyone who's not looking into this subject is just putting their head deep in the sand and ignoring the obvious. So.
Well, I ran across a guy you might be interested in. His name is Gary Taubes. T-A-U-B-E-S.
Right.
And he's not a doctor or a dietitian or anything like that. He's a science journalist.
Right.
And he was working on Cold Fusion until that got blown out of the water, and he needed something else to write about, so he got after nutrition. And he wrote a book called Good Calories, Bad Calories, which is a tome. It must be 600 pages.
Sure.
And only people like me and you read that stuff.
Well, I'm looking at his page now, The Case for Keto.
Yeah. I read that book, and it set me off. We went to a Noam Chomsky lecture in Boulder one time, and we got the last two tickets high in the balcony, mm-hmm. and I could hardly fit my fat ass into the seat, and I thought, I got to do something. And then I read the book, and then I switched to a different kind of eating and solved the problem.
Good.
But I credited Taubes. I even emailed him one time and said, you know, I did this for myself, but I owe a lot of it to you because you gave me the information. And he wrote back and said, thank you.
Yeah, he's one. I've saw quite a few videos on the toxicity of sugar, and I guess it's mainly yes. refined sugar. And
yeah. Well, yeah. It was the kind of sugar that goes directly to your bloodstream, low fructose corn syrup,
high fructose corn syrup, which is a toxin.
Yeah, right. And that bypasses the liver and goes straight to the bloodstream, and that was the most dangerous thing we were eating, and they changed the name since that time to corn sugar.
Right, glucose, fructose, it has a million different names, none of them are. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Anyway, Taubes is an interesting man who did some very good work, I thought. He also wrote a book for the general public called Why We Get Fat and What to Do About It. Uh-huh. And it's sold a lot of copies. And I see a lot more talk about good diets now than I used to in those days.
Uh-huh. And you have to wonder, is he also given to us, or is he telling the truth? It's well, you've obviously... You're the proof in the pudding that what he says works, and a lot yes. of it is common sense.
Whether he was given to us or rose from the ashes, I don't know.
When you bring up Cold Fusion, that really sets me off because...
yeah, I don't know what to make of that. What did you learn about it?
Well, my idea is the whole nuclear science industry is just plain voodoo. Is just alchemy, basically. And I have a pretty... I know he's on your blog, SMJ. He likes to dump passages from Wikipedia. But what he's trying to say, I think, is right. And that is that it's all alchemy. And nuclear is not real. And once more, they're playing with the things that we can't see. And making stories up. It's complete fantasy. So fusion, cold fusion, I think it's all part of the same alchemistic game.
Yeah. I don't know. Judy Wood talked about that a lot, and mm-hmm. it was pretty well discredited. She thought it was worthy of following up on and was falsely discredited, but then I lost faith in her, so I had two negatives in front of me, and I just gave up on it.
Yeah, I think it's alchemy. The idea that what's more logical, that they just filmed all the scenes beforehand on 9/11, and well, they created a military grade smokescreen. They just brought the towers down as CDI controlled demolition has millions of videos online that you can watch, and they are definitely works of art bringing down large buildings. Mm-hmm. It is incredible. It looks like magic, but it's real. Controlled demolition, it's fantastic. Yeah. Or do you think that a magical weapon from space, however it got up there, was disintegrating molecules before your eyes and then creating all this effect of papers, not affecting paper or making these strange-looking car artifacts at the base of the towers? Or did they just burn them and drag them in? Or were they just part of a set recreating New York, which is probably one of the most used film props, the city that is, for any city ever in the history of movies? So you don't think they have ability to film all that beforehand? Come on.
Yeah, plus CGI had just come into its own. Mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed that I fell for Judy Wood, but...
Well, I have her book. I'm not going to sell the book because now it's... It's a testament to my belief for a period of time.
Yeah, or my gullibility, too. But is she still in business?
I don't know, but it didn't take me long to get out of that rabbit hole. I went in and came right out pretty quickly.
I didn't. I probably spent a year there.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I went right to Clues Forum in September Clues, and even though they don't offer every explanation, it was enough to get me out of the alchemistic world and get back into, okay, media fakery, movies. I understand movies and Hollywood, and I don't know the whole spook business about recreating or creating phony personas or changing personas or the 11 ways that you can simulate victims that I put on my blog. So it just, it was more logical.
Yeah. Yeah. Clues Forum has done some very good work.
Yeah. They definitely, they put me on the right course.
Yeah. You got to give them credit when they do the good work. And that includes Miles too.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I'm not saying no one is perfect. Miles has great work. Simon Shack, Hoy Polloi, and a couple others that were strong on the Clues Forum. It's super quiet now, but they did their function for 9/11. They made everything aware. So when something like COVIDs came along, pretty easy for me to decode it and not be a believer in any of it, just because I know PSYOPs. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. Too. I was fine.
I never had even a temporary moment where I thought this virus is real. I didn't understand virology and how phony that is. Uh-huh. I just thought they were inventing a fake virus, and I didn't know what was in store for us. Uh-huh. But the fact that they declared a pandemic on March 11th told me something.
Or what is characterized as a pandemic. They never actually announced a pandemic. They said it is characterized as one. So they're very careful with their words.
Yes, I did some research, and I got to go back and pick up on it again because the year is over, but it had to do with excess deaths in the U.S. in 2020. And we're right in line with years past. There's nothing unusual going on.
Right.
You know, and they have been reassigning deaths from heart attacks and flu and influenza and pneumonia and diabetes and everything.
Or they're just double counting them. They give you just die with COVIDs.
And exactly.
You die with it. It's just like you die with for the most part, you die with your arm. Most people die with an arm. So are we going to count all the people that died with an arm?
That's the most obvious part of the scam.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sell well. People say, well, if the virus isn't real, how did 400,000 people die?
Same way they died the year before. Of all the bad habits, bad eating. Number one cause of death is heart attacks and then stroke, which is usually caused by diet, medication. Just the top 10 has not changed, actually.
Yeah, iatrogenic is right up there, too. Mm-hmm. Death by doctor.
Right, right.
Yeah, I lost a brother to, he was diagnosed with a high PSA, which is prostate-specific antigen.
Right.
And the doctor said he needed to do something about it.
Okay.
And he did. He had the surgery. It was debilitating. And then maybe a year later or a year and a half later, it turns out he has intestinal cancer. Uh-huh. And he can't do anything about it. He just slowly died. But I've always suspected that had he just left his prostate alone, he'd still be alive.
Yeah, and that's actually an issue with, I know in my family, they say it's genetic, so I know my father is having that issue right now. And you have to do something about it because it does affect your ability to urinate, so it's not like you can just ignore it. You have to do something.
Yeah, most of us, as we age, will probably have prostate cancer. It's very slow. They call them turtles. Uh-huh. Versus jackrabbits. If you get the jackrabbit, it's going to get you. Uh-huh. You really can't run from it. But most of us have the turtles. So I was going for annual physicals up until a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. And my PSA, not a doctor, said I had a high PSA and I needed to go see the people that do the slice and dice. And I had read Richard Albom's book on the PSA hoax.
Right, right.
Which was a great book. And I called her back and said, you know, it just so happens I was waiting to have the physical that day. And so I went to the gym that morning and I had a very vigorous physical workout. And that will cause a high PSA.
Right.
And I haven't seen her since.
Yeah. You know,
she wanted me to be cut up.
Yeah, that's not.
And I don't have any ill health effects at age 70, you know.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well.
Obviously, I'm going to die of something, but at this point in time, I don't have any ill health.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I wouldn't recommend going to an empty hospital now anyway, because I think a lot of the staff aren't even there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I do have a hernia.
Mm.
We live on a steep hillside, and we have to clear trees off the hillside to bring them down for firewood. And I was picking up the stumps that I had cut down that day and just physically throwing them down, down to get them down the hill into the driveway of our next door neighbor. And I popped a hernia.
And is that where the base of your abdomen just opens up and things fall out?
No, nothing falls out. It's just a small hernia. And you just put a truss on it, you're fine. But I went to see a doctor about it, thinking I probably needed surgery because I had had a hernia when I was younger. Same thing, a small hernia. And then I played a volunteer father-daughter basketball game with one of my daughters and went up for a rebound and tore the thing wide open.
Mm-hmm. So that should be sewn back?
Yeah, there I needed surgery. And in this case, I thought I probably, at my age, should probably have the surgery too, because they do know how to fix that particular thing.
Uh-huh.
And I was all set to go in, and I was called by the office and said, by the way, you have to have a PSA test.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, that's a deal breaker. And I refused to have the PSA test so they wouldn't do the surgery.
Why do you need a PSA test?
You got me.
Well, you know, that's almost as crazy as the COVID test. I know they force that on everybody.
Yeah, it's their means by which they simulate the illusion of a virus that's spreading.
Mm-hmm. That is just a requirement. Unfortunately, my daughter, when she went into emergency, I couldn't go with her because she's an adult, and unless they're a child, you can't accompany in the era of COVID, which is crazy. So no one can advocate, and she was basically high on sugar, so your brain is not working properly. You're in a fog, sugar fog, and they were sticking one of these Klaus Schwabs up her nose before she knew it. She agreed to it, but she didn't. She's a passive individual, like most people are when they're in such a condition and such a place, an intimidating place in an emergency.
Oh, yeah, we trust doctors way too much.
So she got the COVID test. Negative, of course, but yeah. Even if it was positive, I don't know if they would even treat you if you didn't submit, which to me is not good.
Yeah, so I refused to submit, and they said, we will not do the surgery, and I said, fine. We were supposed to go down to Baja, and we're supposed to be down there right now. Baja, you know, the peninsula down there beneath California. It's one of my favorite places because we can kayak and watch whales and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to leave last Monday and come back Sunday, I think. And then I got a note from the airline that says, by the way, regulations have changed now for all people returning to the U.S. from Mexico must have a PCR test before reentering the country. So we canceled the trip. And I talked to the Airbnb gal, and she was just beside herself saying, you know, everybody's canceling. I thought that must be the objective. They don't want people traveling.
They don't want anyone flying. They always said that we're killing the environment with all these bloody flights. That was definitely always part of Agenda 2030, 21, 2050. Stop all this frivolous air travel.
Yeah, that's part of climate change, too.
Yeah, that's how it was tied in.
Mexico was coming alive. The Sea of Cortez, the industry down there in the Pacific Ocean, the resorts and all that kind of stuff were alive and people were flying down there and everything. And I think they decided we got to put a stop to this because Mexico was prospering again. So that was just devastating. And you know what? They found out yesterday the flight we were supposed to be on it was a direct flight from Denver down to Baja was canceled.
The whole flight?
The entire flight, which means that everybody on it probably canceled their reservation.
Yeah, they don't want to submit. Well, we've got the COVID's prison camps filling up the empty hotels here. So they're constantly... That's some of my favorite videos are the breakout videos where you could just walk out. They just threaten the hell out of you. But I've been posting a few of those. We have a couple intrepid reporters and a couple of vigilant citizens, as I call them. That are explaining your rights, that because your rights trump policy, that you can just leave. But the intimidation factor is huge. Canadians are super compliant, super trusting of the government. Don't forget, we decided to stay with the crown while you guys started your own country. So we're very beholden to the apron strings of the queen.
Did you hear about the Portuguese PCR case?
Yes.
Yeah. That was, it tells you that every now and then the courts work, but the date of the decision was November 22nd, so
yeah.
I'm not sure what to make of that.
That's true. Hey, I have another Mark who wants to call in. Do you want to take a question?
Absolutely.
So, oops. I just blew Mark away. Hold on a sec. That was not good. Oh, you're still there. Sorry. I am not too good at adding calls. Let me just figure this out.
You are better than I am.
Did you get put on hold?
It was dark and quiet.
It went dark. Okay. Let me add Marcus. He wants to ask you a question. Marcus Allen, I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Are you there?
Now Marcus is here. Marcus, say hi to Mark.
Marcus Allen,
Well, Marcus Allen, yes, I know the name.
All right. He's on the call.
Marcus, say hi to Mark.
Okay, you're very, very quiet on my end.
No, Mark has to turn off his audio streamer. Mark, turn off your audio streamer, no? You're still streaming the show?
No, Mark has to turn off his...
I just heard myself.
Do I have to do something
here? No, you're good. Marcus is playing the audio in the background, I think.
Oh, I see.
He hears himself.
Okay.
How about now? Marcus.
Go ahead. Talk.
Much, much better.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good, Marcus. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I have a bunch of little questions for you. I think you'll find them interesting. Are you ready?
You'll find my answers even smaller.
Okay, cool. What technocracy lie surprises you the most?
I just read the other day where one of the comments on the blog said that they're now suggesting people wear two masks instead of one, and that they're going to start using the swab in the PCR test up our butts instead of our noses.
That's just mockery for me.
Yeah, that is.
It's mockery. These guys are never ending with their mockery.
Yeah, the technocracy, the whole field of virology is just absurd. I just learned from your site, AB, that...
Ab.
Okay.
I love how you call me AB.
Sorry.
That's funny.
Anyway, the two people you have on talking about their book, What Why We Get Ill and What to Do About It.
Oh, I love that. Like that. I love those guys.
Yeah. He said that Stefan Lanka won't even call himself a virologist anymore because the field is so bankrupt.
Yeah. I call them vileologists.
Yeah, that's a good one. So I would say virology is the biggest prank they've ever pulled on us, and it's been going on for 66 years now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so my next question is, what is the biggest conspiracy of all conspiracies?
After Jesus?
It's up to you.
Well, I have heard people call Corona the biggest scientific hoax in human history, but it rests on germ theory. Mm-hmm. If Pasteur had not done what he had done, we would not have medicine the way we have it today. Uh-huh. So I would call germ theory the biggest conspiracy mm-hmm. in terms of just science.
And what about the future? Are you excited about the future? Are you nervous about the future? Somewhere in between?
Oh, I guess somewhere in between. My wife and I are very lucky. We live alone in a house on a hillside that's paid for, and you know, we're financially secure. But I go to the grocery store quite often, and I know that everybody I see there has a job and a pile of debt, and they're scared out of their wits because they watch the news. And so I guess I'm more optimistic than most because I know everything that's going on is a hoax, whereas most people I know think it's real. So mm-hmm. I guess I'm in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And my final official question is, who's your go-to truth teller these days?
Hmm. Well, I like Blanca. I like Andy Kaufman and Tom Cowan. And there's a lot of other names I should mention, but my memory just isn't that good. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing good work. There's a gal out in California who threatened to sue the county commissioners of Orange County.
Sounds like you're talking about Peggy Hall.
There you go, yeah. And they removed the mask requirement because of her.
Mm-hmm.
State of Montana just replaced every Democrat in office or defeated every Democrat running for office with a Republican, and they've now removed the mask requirement. And I don't know what they're doing about distancing and testing and all that kind of stuff, but common sense is coming back up there. And that's all cause for optimism, don't you think?
Oh yeah, I'm super optimistic. I've never seen so many people awake in my life, and I've been waiting for this for a long time. So I'm thrilled. Yeah,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah,
yeah. That's they're not in my family,
and they're not my family either. But
not in my family. I'm actually trying to invite my brother, who is surprisingly the most, I would say, has the biggest crack in not believing, but it's really hard to tell with him. He's really on the wrong side, but I just see a tiny crack that I can maybe get him over to my house without him wearing 6 feet of masks, which is the new recommendation. Sorry, that was a graphic I saw. You have to wear 6 feet of masks. So
we just put ourselves in Faraday bags.
Right, right. Marcus, do you read Peace of Mindful?
I do.
What do you think of the blog, the conglomerate blog?
It's a lot of stuff to take in. I'm more of a sort of soundbitey type of person. I scan through things, and mm-hmm. and that's why I come to your site like every day, maybe sometimes twice a day.
Me too.
But
thank you.
But occasionally, I would say maybe once a week, I'll go to Mark's site, and it's great. I wish there was more of it out there, that's for sure. And I wish he did more audios because he has obviously he's done this before. I'd like to hear more of it.
Yeah.
Well, I started out as a TV star.
How's that?
I was telling you, but it was a what do they call it? Public access TV in Billings, Montana.
Yeah, I heard you saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. We must have had 30, maybe even 40 listeners, but that's where I learned how to have fun interviewing people. I thought I wouldn't have enough topics, and I never had enough time to cover all the topics.
Right.
And the same with blogging. My son started out with me, and he burned out right away. Mm-hmm. He just couldn't come up with something to write every day. And I've just never been troubled that way, even though I don't always write about interesting stuff. And a lot of times the comments are more interesting than the posts. I do have things
in
my mind every day.
You got great comments. Great commenters.
Yeah, aren't they great? Yeah, I love those people.
I think Marcus will tell you, Marcus gets tons of his research from comments.
Yeah.
Oh, I live in the comments. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, you really have to.
I often find more value in the comments than in the article itself.
So, the writer we call Steppers is in her comments has a guy named Tim R. Mm-hmm. and also Scott R.C. and then Oregon Matt. and the four of them are putting together a thread all by themselves that is more interesting than anything I've written lately.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, go to Stepper's last post and you'll find that.
What's he talking about?
They're talking about people and the future of vaccines, and Oregon Matt put up a comment today that said we're all being led down a garden path by, I think the word was zoomorphic, but I could be wrong about that, viruses that originate in animals and jump into humans. Mm-hmm. He said that they're saying now there's thousands of them, so that...
Well, there's 300,000. I think our old buddy Chris Kendall did the math a year ago, and yeah, it's, I think it's over 300,000, which that's a lot of vaccination.
Yeah, isn't that something?
And, that's unlimited.
And they said, the people behind this nonsense said, the thing is, people travel, and there I thought was the other shoe falling.
Mm-hmm.
We spread the virus when we travel, we're told.
Right. Who is your favorite co-author on your blog?
Well, Tyrone. He doesn't write much anymore, but he was always my favorite. Steppers is more a researcher than a writer. Writing is hard for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Steve Kelly up in Montana has his own line of thought. He's a naturalist, a conservationist, campaigning for wilderness and all that kind of stuff. So he was unable to get into Montana newspapers anymore, so he came to the blog to write. And he's recently had surgery. He's recovering, but he puts up good stuff. I like.
Did you invite them, or do they ask to come on to your blog?
I invited Steppers, and, I invite them.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to invite a lot of the commenters, but they get cold feet right away.
Really? Is that just because they don't want to highlight their own material, or they're afraid to be wrong?
Maybe some of that, but also just the responsibility of putting something up on a blog and facing criticism and being wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff makes it a little bit intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
I've asked Oregon Matt if he'd take a shot at this, and he's not interested. He said he deals with people. I hope I'm not talking out of school, but he said he has people he deals with, and that he would rather, you know, put his information out to that crowd. That's fine, but he does use the blog, and he's very, very in tune with Steppers and the work she does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have great commenters. I could never get many commenters on my blog at all. I don't know what the problem is. Maybe it's just my commenting system, or I don't know what it is, but I just could never get that kind of interaction that you've managed to get.
Which I can help you with that.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Just end each post with a question.
All right. The only other thing I only manually add commenters to my blog because there's so much spam. I don't know how I just couldn't be bothered deleting all the spam, so I just said, if you want a comment, you got to send me an email, and I'll just add you manually. That was the only foolproof way I could stop all the spam.
Yeah, WordPress does a pretty good job on that, but the only filter I have is to ban somebody when they, you know, they, and not permanently, but they tend to take over a comment thread and throw in 10, 15 comments.
You don't like
everybody
that.
Else, and it's usually dumb stuff they say. Like, I put a picture of Rosalind Carter along with John Wayne Gacy up in one of my blog posts recently, and right away I got a comment from a guy who's banned that says, "Can't you see that she's a tranny?" Talking about Rosalind Carter, who was the first lady from, 77 through 81 in the U.S.
Right, right, right.
And obviously hiding a dick.
I can't tell if you're being facetious or not. Do you agree with that?
God, no. Being very facetious.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's anything to the whole elite gender inversion, or some of the first ladies that definitely look like men, including Michelle or Michael Obama?
All I can say is that I can definitely be wrong about stuff, and there are those that see and those of us who have to be shown, and I've not yet been shown, so maybe I will change my mind in the future.
Really? So there's nothing you've seen that makes you suspicious of the whatever they are doing to their their body.
Well, I know there are transvestites.
For sure.
Yeah, and I guess the thing I don't understand is, you know, how do they become famous?
Well, the assistant health secretary who was the health secretary or the health public health leading health official in Pennsylvania, that's a confirmed transvestite. He's confirmed it. There's no, okay. He's proud of it. Is that right, Marcus?
Well, that is correct. Yeah. I'm in Pennsylvania, so I got the experience on that.
He's off the charts.
There are people that comment on the blogs who see trannies behind every dress. And the reason this guy thought that Rosalind Carter was a tranny was because she has a small bosom.
Yeah, I think that's pushing. That could be just trying to discredit the whole idea that it exists at all.
Yeah, well, I know it exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tim, don't you look at the length of the arm? Isn't that like a telltale sign for you?
I don't have any one go-to thing. I think there's so many different attributes and I agree with, in general, with, and every time I point out to my family that they're all female, by the way, they said, well, there are ugly women, you know, and they do.
Yeah, that's why my wife always says that. They're just ugly.
Yeah. There are ugly women, but there's a lot of attributes, and I haven't listed them lately, but yeah, the length of the arm. I don't think the index finger works too well. I think it's way too general. But there's other things that I don't think you can get surgery for or body morph, and I believe the shoulder width and the number of heads that you can get across the shoulders or the position of the hips, There's quite a few things. Now I see in the public, cause I do get out a little bit, different shaped women, and there are lots of women that look boyish because of their lack of curves, that kind of thing. So I'm not measuring every single biometric, but I think there's the ones that they put before us, the ones they promote, those are obviously the ones that are most interesting because they're giving out clues and they're endlessly photographed, so they're putting it in our face to at least examine.
Yeah. How about somebody like Hillary Swank?
Yeah, I think she's made the list of transpicious, as they call it.
I have a little go-to system because I'm into this myself.
You like it.
And what I'll do is I'll put in the person's name into Google search, and then I'll add LGBT.
Okay.
And if it's on like glad.com and they're featuring that person, that's a good head start that something's up there.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's these transgender sites that are featuring the people you're typing in, that's usually a good indicator for me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Hilary Swank was interesting because first she starred in a movie produced by Clint Eastwood directed where she played a boxer.
And then there
was supposedly, and it's turned out to be kind of bogus, but it was a young girl who became a boy, I think in Oklahoma, and they called the movie they made up But Boys Don't Cry and who should play the transvestite, but Hilary Swank.
Right.
I just typed in Hillary Swank LGBT into Google search. I suggest you both do that if you can. And it's an endless parade of hints that it's probably true.
Right. Because she, yeah. Well, especially since the movie Boys Don't Cry. So for sure. I'm not even going to read her Wikipedia because I just sort of know her face. But yeah, for sure. And actually, Mark, I thought maybe this would be up your alley because you did a lot of the face splitting. And I thought because you'd like to analyze imagery for similarities, that this might be something that.
Well, I have looked a lot at Hillary Swank because she belongs to what we call the Matt Damon group.
Right.
a large group of actors who look exactly like Matt Damon and yet are easily told apart.
And what do you make of that? Is it just a look they go for, or do you think, like I do, that they make people?
I think they make people.
Yes.
That's why we call them Bakunosky brats from the book Brave New World.
Okay.
The Bakunosky process, where they were splitting eggs and
Bakunosky process. Okay.
Yeah. They were splitting eggs and getting like 96 people from one egg and then mm-hmm. implanting them in different people. And mm-hmm. we get this look. Tom Brady looks just like Matt Damon, looks just like Jimmy Kimmel.
Okay, right. I like that.
And
is it just because it's a good look?
It is a good look.
Yeah.
These are good-looking men, so it was mm-hmm. obviously chosen. Mm-hmm. But then Hilary Swank fit right in there, too. She looks just like Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. And so does Jennifer Garner, who was married to Ben Affleck, who also was part of the group.
Oh, I like that. So
if you type in Hilary Swank, Matt Damon, and go to the images, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? My brother-in-law is a dead ringer for Matt Damon. And I know I know he doesn't come from the Bakunosky process, but I look at him and I'm just stunned every time. So, unfortunately.
He's just naturally good looking.
Well, he is. And, my sister married him. But, unfortunately, he's completely indoctrinated with the COVID, so I don't see him anymore. It's crazy. And he's in the health profession. I think they might be the most vulnerable to the hoax because if they break away from it, their income is gone.
Yeah.
Very powerful. When you're plugged into the money system, Mark, it's just, you got to make a choice.
Yeah, Andrew Kaufman talks about that too, that he's lost a lot of friends since this whole thing started. He was in the medical profession and he said he understands because if your mind doesn't follow the money, you're going to be out of work.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, have you ever seen Andrew Kaufman in the flesh?
No. Steffers has.
Really?
Because he kind of reminds me of Snowden. Mm-hmm. I think Snowden is a CGI character. Every time I see Andrew Kaufman, he looks very CGI-ish to me.
Well, I have a photo of Steffers and Andy Kaufman in Philadelphia together.
Okay.
That's the only evidence I have.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. You trust Steffers?
I do.
Okay.
I got to write down Andy Kaufman and... And what's the guy's name in Russia again? The guy that was supposed to be in the Russian airport.
Snowden?
Yeah, Snowden. Take a look at that.
You have a picture?
No. I mean tomorrow when I have time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just had somebody ask me to take a look at Aaron Rodgers, quarterback, and Ellen Goodman. Or Ellen DeGeneres, excuse me.
Okay.
And there was a resemblance there, a very strong resemblance, but it ended right at the nose. Everything below the nose was precise, everything above the nose not. And then Tyrone stepped in and said, take a look at Aaron Rodgers and Jake Gyllenhaal. And I did that, and they were an exact match.
Wait, who's this? Aaron Rodgers.
He's a quarterback.
And Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake. Okay, I see that.
I don't know these people. I know Aaron Rodgers. I don't know what he looks like, though.
Yeah, that is a pretty good match.
So you think, although
I'm seeing a picture with them side by side.
Meaning?
They're literally in the same room side by side.
Yeah, they are different people.
Mm.
But they might, you're saying they might have come from the Bakunosky process?
Yeah.
Okay.
I coined the term Bakunosky brats.
Right.
And one of our writers at that time suggested I not do that because there could be so many reasons why these people look so much alike. So the furthest I've been able to trace it back is Paul Newman.
Mm-hmm.
Such an incredibly good-looking man, and he fits right in with the brats.
Interesting.
Mark, are you familiar with the golden ratio, the Fibonacci sequence, all that stuff?
Yes, I am.
So that ties into why these people are so good-looking.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, I think it's a strong possibility.
The other is relationships. Like in my family, we had four boys, and anybody could see that we were brothers. And yet, we don't look at all alike when you look at us. We're not remotely anything like what these people do when they look alike. Brad Pitt's another.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Even Clint Eastwood was put on a list of transpicious individuals. Did you know that?
No.
Mm-hmm. No, most of these I don't investigate, but if someone puts it out there, I try and remember it. Because all the people that are elevated and put before us to lead us around, well, how did they get there? Why do they stay there? I often thought, even before I was an investigator of truth, I thought, why do they always put the same people in movies? Is there no one else of any talent? Because I do like, why does the same guy play a million different characters? Because, okay, I like actors, but I could like anyone that was acting in a good story, because I'm really there for the story, not for the person.
So, I've wondered the same thing, same people in and out of the movies. So often, like with who was it? Tom Cruise. You lose your willing suspension of disbelief. You know, he's been in too many movies.
Yeah, I thought, there's supposed to be 350 million Americans? Could they not? Are there not a few others that we could just try out at least? Because it's a good story should sell the movie. I know they say that it's always the star that sells the movie, but is that really true?
Well, it's the quality of the acting, because I've seen bad acting, and it does destroy a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
what do you think of the idea that Barack Obama was just a intelligence creation? He was a made for TV president. He was basically created to do the job.
Yeah, I believe that.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause he came out of nowhere, seemingly.
His lineage has been traced back to the 12th century on both sides, his mother and his father, to one of the kings of Scotland.
But I think it's
eludes me.
But it's probably totally manufactured, though.
Could well be.
I just think that by all accounts, it looks like a black man or a black woman, and mixed it with a white. Just a white set of gametes, I guess, and made an egg and planted it in a CIA host. And they probably have hundreds of these people that they create for the potential future. They don't just hedge their, they don't just have one, but for instance, AOC, that woman or man or whatever that is, that's definitely one of the people they put in to germinate in the political world and see if they sprout.
The suspicious thing about Obama right away that I thought was that he was said to be a community organizer in Chicago. Hmm. And all I could think of, man, he was a spy. he was infiltrating the groups there.
No, I just think that the Chicago gang that has been heavy into politics, they just managed him, basically, to taught him how to be a politician. I think it's like a school.
He was that. He was said to be a scholar, but he wouldn't release his scripts.
Sure, of course. He's just a plant.
That. Yeah. And the other thing is, and Miles Mathis mentioned this too, his mother's name, first name was Stanley.
Right. But that's just a tribute to the whole spook industry.
Yeah. Who names their daughter Stanley?
Yeah, but that was I don't even think that person existed. I think
Stanley Ann Dunham.
I looked at that image and it looks sort of like the original Paul, which is seriously.
There's a photo of Obama sitting with his grandfather and grandmother. I'm not sure. Maybe his mother on a park bench. Mm-hmm. I'll have to dig it up and send it to you. But it's so obvious that there's a floating arm there. That was a computer-generated photograph.
All these conspiracies around the individual, I think it's just a misdirect from the central idea that this person was just created. Because we know we can create humans. We know there's sperm banks. We know there's egg banks. We know you can put them together. We know the elite probably don't even carry their own children. Why would you?
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass, and you might die.
I suspected when Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were adopting all those kids that they were picking up brats that were going to be famous someday.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe. I don't know. I think it was just to distort the whole idea of a family, personally.
Yeah, it could be.
Just to... Well, we've been going 2 hours. It's been a very interesting conversation. I was going to bring Benoit into the call, but I think he fell asleep. He's over in Switzerland.
So okay, it's 8 hours earlier.
Yeah, he's four. Yeah, he's in it's the Central European time zone. But
he's an REM.
Right. Well, he's a night owl, but he's a big contributor at Fakeologist. But we could go on and on. There's so much. You have so much content, and sometimes I'm glad when you're not posting 10 posts a day, because I know I won't be able to do them justice. I think, oh, good, he doesn't have anything today. I don't have to read something big and then try and figure it
out. That's why I go out and look for new writers to take some of the pressure off.
Yeah.
I like fresh material up, and I also know people don't tend to read long posts, but I like
I know. Well, the content is so incredible now. There's so much content from so many people. It's just a tsunami of stuff. Do you find the same, or are you looking in every COVID corner, for instance?
Yeah, every now and then I get all COVID out and want to do something else. So I wrote about the Black Dahlia recently, which was
what's that?
A 1948 psyop where they discovered a body in Los Angeles that was cut in half, all the organs removed, the mouth made into a gross, grotesque smile like the Joker.
Oh, nice. And,
yeah, it's kind of like the early OJ. It was a huge national story, and they never found the person who did it, and they still talk about it.
Interesting. What did you think of the OJ? I'm sure you think the same as I do, but what was your take on the OJ thing? Was that just another made-for-television story?
Well, I think that his wife, names are not coming to me, but his wife became his sister-in-law.
Uh-huh. It was
Nicole Simpson.
Right.
Yeah, she became, I've forgotten the other name. I haven't been doing this for a long time, but she became her younger sister. And if you look at their faces,
Do you think she existed?
Nicole?
Right.
How would I know? I guess I saw pictures, lots of them.
No, I know, but is there any proof she existed? Or she was just taken as a similar template from the actual actress that played, I can't remember the name either. She was very vocal in the movie, in the OJ movie. The Simpson. I can't remember her name right now.
Maybe she was just someone who became Nicole. Mm-hmm. And then they killed her off, and she became Denise, I think it is.
Yeah, Denise. I just don't think Nicole Brown Simpson existed.
I never thought of it that way. That's a good way to look at it, though.
Well, you're not going to find a million pictures of her.
That's true. The pictures I saw of her, she wasn't that attractive.
In fact, kind of looked dude-like, didn't she?
Yeah, looked like a man.
She did.
Looked like a linebacker. Wasn't and to her running back, but yeah, it's just. But did you at the time believe that the whole OJ drama was real? Because I did the whole time. I didn't even think twice.
Yeah, they had me totally.
Yeah, but now do you believe it was a complete psyop?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing that there's almost nothing real that's ever happened that's really big? Like that when I think about that, it just always blows me away.
The word I think they use for this is cryptocracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is staged for us. It's just a few people that have to rule the billions.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to keep us constantly distracted and, you know, under thought control.
Like, Mark, when I asked you what was the biggest conspiracy of all conspiracies, I was actually asked that question last week by someone I met. And my answer to that was that everything that is what you think is over there is really on the other opposite side. Everything in life is the opposite of what we're told.
I tend to agree with you. Absolutely.
Everything's inverted, upside down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like we're probably all walking upside down right now in some strange way. We're probably all falling in the opposite direction and something else is keeping us right side. I don't know. It's just, but with regards to major media stories, it's, to me, it's stunning that almost, as far as I know, all the biggest ones, they're all staged and nobody really outside this small circle even considers that thought. That to me is amazing.
It's so hard to make the break. I was, I guess I was 38 years old, maybe 39, and I was reading a book called, it was about Cuban relationships with the U.S. I was still in my Kennedy phase. And in it, they described an event where Argentine intelligence was saying one thing about the Cubans and American intelligence was saying something else. And it turned out that the Argentinians were telling the truth and the Americans were lying. And that just blew my mind because I didn't think Americans ever lied.
Hmm.
And that was my initial break, and I kept pushing along that avenue. And at a certain point in time, within probably 6 months of that, I realized that the Cold War was fake, and it was still going on. And that lifted the weight of the world off my shoulders. That was my first instinct. I felt real freedom.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's what freedom is.
Were you worried about nuclear weapons and bombs and being blown to kingdom come at that point?
Absolutely. Yes, I believed all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I believed that Russians were out to get us, and it's really hard to unbrainwash yourself. But I had to do it, and I made a lot of mistakes on the way.
Don't you find it strange that even to this absolute minute, they still blame the Russians for stuff?
I know.
Like, the only thing I blame the Russians for is vodka.
Bad vodka or good vodka?
Well, I don't know. I don't drink, but I just...
Oh, okay.
I think Polish vodka's, according to my Polish friends, way better. But I don't drink. But it just blows my mind. Like, can you not find another country by now? Like, to me, the most obvious country to pick on would be China.
Yeah. Well, the one you hear the least about would be the one that would probably be most guilty of this kind of stuff, and that would be the British.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, believe it or not, if you look into the history of almost everything, it's Belgium.
Really?
Like the first school, the first one to sign up for technocracy, the first of everything is Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because we don't hear about them.
That's right.
Well, that's where the World Court is, the Hague, is it not? Am I got that right, or is that Bill? Is that Holland?
Is that Geneva?
The Hague.
I think the Hague is. Well, Belgium is the one of the headquarters of the European Union, I think. But you're right. I don't know. I'm pretty ignorant about Europe. I feel embarrassed now. But Belgium is.
As ignorant as you are.
Belgium is Dutch, French, German.
The Hague is Netherlands.
Yeah, the Hague is Netherlands. That's right. But Belgium is an interesting country. Well, it's a corporation probably, but.
Well, do you guys want to do this again sometime?
Absolutely.
This has been fun.
No, this is great. I can't, like Marcus said, do you do many audios? Have you been on many audios? Because one of the.
I just did one with Travis Mateer, who runs a website called Reptile Dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
He's on our blog list, and he turned out to be a really nice guy and an enjoyable time, just like this.
Did you have an audio link to that?
He hasn't published it yet. He went far afield, and he tends to talk about his hometown a lot, so I don't know if it's going to fit in.
Oh.
I told him don't worry about it, but secretly I want him to air it.
Where's his hometown?
Missoula, Montana.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't be bragging about that either. I'm just kidding. I don't even know where it is.
I would love to live in Montana right now.
No, you wouldn't. It's got to be cold.
It is that.
No, I would not want it. You'd be frozen solid.
I spent the first 59 years of my life there.
Oh, okay. And is it really cold?
It can be very cold. We live in Colorado now, and we're at 7,800 feet, so we have a lot of snow and stuff like that. But if we don't have a front coming here, through here, our mean temperature tends to be in the 40s, 50s.
Since you're
Montana's would be 20s, 30s.
Since you're so high up, does that cause any problems for someone your age? Because I know my dad, when he was in Mexico, he was 5,000 feet up, and I think there's certain cautions when you have heart or blood issues because of the lack of oxygen. There is a difference.
Well, I know when we first moved here, I had a hard time. We have a steep driveway, and I had a hard time. I got winded every time I walked up, but that's gone away. We've climbed the 14ers, you know, the 14,000-foot mountains. We've kept ourselves in very good shape, and I still go to the gym 4 or 5 times a week.
Wow. So, I got none.
Just running from Father Time.
No, I know. I got to do something. I guess when you hit your 50s, you got to start getting serious.
Yeah, I got serious on April 20th, 1990. I gave up smoking. That was my 40th birthday.
Yeah.
And I started working out that day, and I never quit.
Oh, wow. So you're probably in great shape.
Well, I feel good.
You don't have a spare tire?
No, I don't. I got it one time.
I think I got two now. I gotta work. I gotta stop. I know Marcus was telling me about some VAT, something about the fat around your organs, and now that's all I can think about.
read good calories, bad calories by Taubes.
I will. Well, does that mean I have to stop eating sugar? Because that's a big problem for me.
That is a problem.
I see on the site he's crossed out potatoes too, sweet potatoes, which I was told are good for you. And then he has a picture of broccoli, which I don't really like compared to sweet potatoes.
Broccoli is nothing but a delivery vehicle for ranch dressing.
Right. Yeah. Sure. Well, he has it highlighted and an avocado, and he's crossed out a piece of toast.
Yeah, I gave up bread entirely.
Ah, oh, jeez.
But the thing about it is I'm never hungry. You know, I used to get the shakes and stuff like that after a carbohydrate crash, and that doesn't happen anymore.
Is that right?
Yeah. You don't lose your desire for food, but you lose your hunger pangs. So I still enjoy good food.
Tim, you can go on the croissant diet.
No, I like croissants. And they're no good for you either.
Seriously, there's a guy who does very well because it has stearic acid in it. Butter has stearic acid.
But can't you just have a pat of butter?
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. I love croissants. And I actually foregoed my croissant today for an English muffin, which is whole wheat.
Oh, English muffins are terrible for you.
No, the whole wheat's good, I think. It was whole wheat.
No. There's differing views on this because different countries like Italy, very pasta intense, and still Italians generally are not fat.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of linoleic acid being the big enemy.
Yeah, that's Dr. Mercola. I think he's
who
promoting.
Got that from actually Dr. Kenobi. Dr. Kenobi, who's an eye doctor. Is big into this, and there Paul Saladino's gotten it from it. Mercola's gotten from it. They're all in a little click. Yeah, linoleic acid. If you just cut that out, you're in great shape. Which is seed oils,
right? All well. There's another doctor who says humans should not eat any oil. Period. Right. No oils.
I agree.
I use oil for cooking.
Right.
If you substituted the oil for cooking, like, do you eat meat?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So every day I put in 2 tablespoons of butter and about 3/4 pound of beef cubes. That's what I eat every day. It's been the best thing I ever did in my life.
Oh, yeah. That'll keep you going. I love beef, chicken, and lately I've been on a Mexican kick. I love Mexican food.
Mm-hmm. The problem with chicken is it has linoleic acid in it.
Is that right?
Well, maybe the CAFO chickens. Do you know what CAFO
all
is?
Chicken.
Oh, yeah. All chicken. Even the ones that are running wild?
Good luck eating something that runs wild because you can't get it down. It's, in fact, one of the secrets to growing beef is you don't want them to move. I know that's terrible to say.
Well, that's not the secret to healthy beef.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because of the fats.
Well, what about
them to move?
Yeah, but if they don't move, they can't eat. Well, I don't know. I think the CAFO beef are not good for you either.
It's horrible. CAFO is horrible.
Mm-hmm. But that's a cow that doesn't move would be in a CAFO operation.
No, that's not true. A CAFO is where they are fed for 2 to 3 months. PUFAs, linoleic acid grains, mm-hmm. to fatten them up.
Right.
When you go grass fed, grass finished, mm-hmm. there's no grains involved. It's just grass.
Well, I agree.
The problem is if they're free to run, mm-hmm. and cows run faster than humans, by the way, which is hard to believe.
Well, a bull does. I know they run fast.
I live next to cows. They run very fast. If you let them move around, then they have no fat, and
they get
very tough meat.
Right.
So you don't want them free range. That's marketing.
What about bison?
Yeah, I heard bison's great.
Yeah, we're going to have lunch at Ted's Montana Grill tomorrow.
Oh, mm. Nice.
Yeah, it's.
Well, they're making me hungry.
We'll both have bison.
A bison burger. Or
very tasty.
Or an elk burger.
Yeah, I think they offer those too.
Wow. Well, you're eating well. You're living well. Well, the next time we convene, you have so many good posts on Peace of Mindful. We could just drill down on one, but we didn't really even talk about all the COVIDs and the virus myth and the germ theory. I really want to promote those ideas because
I would like that too.
Because if people understood the whole germ theory, the terrain theory, what viruses, microzyma, and you're really into that stuff? Because I notice you really...
Yes.
I just grab a lot of your posts and repost them.
Yeah, microzyma is... somebody else had a different name for it, but it appears to be the origin of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know...
Exosomes.
Something like that, but bacteria... Well, who was it? It was Bechamp who talked about microzyma,
uh-huh. right.
and said that all bacteria were formed first by microzyma.
Uh-huh.
And nobody has ever really researched that because there's no money for that kind of research. But we should indeed look into that.
No, we should. We should talk about it. All right. Well, I've got you on Skype now. You got my phone number. We got email. We got a million zillion ways to connect. So, yeah, we should do another just discussion on... And I know you also, I think you promote No More Fake News. I think John Rappaport.
Oh, yeah, Rappaport. Yeah,
God,
I love that guy.
Amazing writer. And
yeah,
he's been,
puts out something brand new every day.
He's been talking about this since AIDS, because this is a carbon copy of AIDS.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we could.
Yeah. He's a good man.
That idea about the monolith, how the marketing of disease, they try and put it all under one monolithic word like cancer. It's it's great marketing.
It is. It's got everybody scared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up now. It's been a couple hours. That's a good talk. And Marcus can tell us about his site once more before we leave.
EscapeTheNewNormal.com, EscapeTheNewNormal.com. And everyone leave a comment underneath wherever you hear this if you want these two guys to do it again. That's how you get the comments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'll put EscapeTheNewNormal.com on the blog roll tomorrow.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to take a poke there.
Yeah, you might be able to set up a franchise in Colorado because I think – Marcus is franchising the idea.
Well, not franchising it. We're expanding it. Yep.
Okay. Cool. I'll look into it.
Okay.
I've got a long list of things to look into. It was a pleasure to talk to both of you guys.
It was great talking to you.
Have a good night.
And thanks for promoting it on your blog because you got a lot of hits.
Yep. Good night to both of you.
All right. Take care. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Sat on their park bench like bookends, a newspaper blown through the grass falls on the round toes of the high shoes of the old friends. Old friends, winter companions, the old men lost in their overcoats, waiting for the sunset. The sounds of the city set in the trees settle like dust on the shoulders of the old friends. Can you imagine us in this van today, sharing a port bench quietly? How terribly strange to be 17. Memory brushes the same years, silently sharing the same left you.